Today's guest is Debbie Sasson, and Debbie is a financial planner and money mindset coach. Well, she's really an ex-financial planner, but she does help people with finance, but she also helps them get to the root of what is causing potentially the problems that they're having with money. And I love that because she is the total package when it comes to what you need for a finance planner, a financial planner, because a lot of financial planners just tell you how to manage, you know, your finances or manage it for you, but they don't really coach you on why you might be overspending or why you're hoarding your money or why you're worried about your money. And there's a lot of that going on with all of us because it comes from what our past experience is. And, you know, oftentimes it's what our parents did and what they modeled for us unknowingly and not meaning to hurt us, you know, but they, you know, we possibly saw our parents fighting about money. We possibly saw our parents spending more than they had, using credit cards too much, all that stuff. And that can cause problems later in life, even though we don't know we carry kind of those imprints. And so we talk about that. It's just an interesting episode because I've never had somebody really talking about finance. I think she's the first guest we really talked about money like this. So she's really knowledgeable. She is ex-Wall Street. She lives in Israel now. She's got 8 kids. And yes, they are 8 kids of hers. They are not like 8 kids that like half of them she inherited from like as stepchildren. And then she talks about how she had her moment of kind of, as I say, Mack truck moment when her husband was diagnosed with cancer. And at the time she had 6 little kids. And she realized that she, as a financial planner, didn't even have her financial house in order. And so that was a big awakening for her. And it changed kind of the rest of her life and the journey that she ended up moving into and deciding to become a coach. So it's very interesting story. She's very knowledgeable. She has a book. So I just enjoyed talking to her. So let's get to the interview now.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Debbie Sasson. And Debbie is a former financial planner, and she is now a business and money mindset coach. And I'm excited to have Debbie here today because we don't talk about finance very much on this podcast and or money, and we should. So I talk about abundance. I have an abundance series, but I know for me, Debbie, and we can talk about this, but I sometimes like to avoid money. When I grew up, my mom was an English teacher, and that's what girls were good at English and boys were good at math. And so one of my limiting beliefs is like, well, I'm not good at numbers. I'm not good at math. And so, but I love spreadsheets, which is kind of weird. So yeah, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited for you to be here and share your story.
Thank you so much, Laurie. I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, yes. So most of my guests do have some sort of midlife transformation, and Debbie is no stranger to that. And in fact, it was really a health crisis with her husband that kind of got her thinking about things differently. So, and you had like 6 kids, you have 8 now. So correct. I can't imagine like what you were going through. So can you go back there and just kind of describe what went through your mind and how you came out of it.
So if we rewind the clock, nearly 20 years, in November, October, it'll be 20 years. My husband, he was diagnosed with cancer at that time. And I had six kids. My youngest was a six-month-old nursing baby. And I mean, that whole situation was very surreal. I really felt like at the time I was living in a movie. My life, my home life was very busy. Can you imagine, like, six kids and a nursling? I was working full time at the Bank of Israel in Israel, where I live. And it was the end of the calendar year. And we published the annual report. And I was working in the foreign currency department. And part of my responsibility was writing the chapter on the developments in the financial markets during the course of the year. So that was part of what I was doing, and visiting my husband in the hospital while he was undergoing chemo. So it was a very full, stressful, high pressure time.
How old were your other kids too? I mean, if you had six, how old were they?
So my oldest would have been, I guess she would have been 11, like if it was 20 years ago, she's 30 now, she would have been 10. But I don't think that, but I don't think so. Wait a second, I have to do the math. my baby at the time is now 19 and she's 31. She's 30. So there's 11 years gap between them. Yeah. So she was 11.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe I'm getting my math. Oh, it was 19 years ago, not 20 years ago. Okay. Cause he's 19.
But you talk about like having, you know, a nursing baby. I mean, all those other kids are very young and need mommy as much as, you know, a nursing baby does. It's just like, yeah, I can't imagine. And was he hospitalized or was he like kind of outpatient?
He was a week in the hospital, two weeks at home.
Wow.
And there was a time when his fever jumped and he had to take an ambulance back to the hospital, whatever.
And he's fine now?
Thank God, remission, 100%, everything, please God, it should just continue. He should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that is a big awakening. And you're like, when something like that scary crisis happens, you're like, we better get things in order, right? Like all of a sudden we have to start looking at our money. Where's the money coming from? We were dealing with life insurance, health insurance, getting an insurance policy to pay for operations and chemo and getting all that stuff. And then of course it's like, where's all our money? How much money do we have? Do we have enough? What if, like, all of these things while you're running on autopilot and running between work and kids and hospital and stuff like that. But that was part of, I'll just like step back and say from the beginning, his diagnosis was very positive. It was, I think, maybe stage 2 cancer, right? And it was a kind that's very curable. So there wasn't, listen, you do have those thoughts in your mind, like, oh no, what if, but it wasn't like the top concern. It was like, but it did all of a sudden shake us out of la la land. Mm-hmm. we're parents of six children and these kind of things can happen. And we better figure this out. So we started really digging in and looking, because my husband and I are both pretty conservative by nature. We're savers, not spenders. But because we have a large family, and since then we had two more kids, now we have eight. So we were always saving, right? I'm not big savings, but we're saving, and we're spending was fine. We weren't like tracking every dollar because we just didn't need to. But all of the other accounts that were kind of on autopilot, we didn't manage them regularly. Let's say we didn't manage them regularly. I even had savings accounts for my kids. Like that was something that I had an auto pay. Like every month we put money into savings accounts for our kids. So we really were very responsible from that point of view. The one place where we weren't taking charge was investments for the future. And I said, I was working at the Bank of Israel in Israel, where I now live, but I had started my career on Wall Street in 1985. I worked in New York for 2 years. I worked in the city of London for a year before I came to Israel. And I had a 401k. I have now a 401k from when I worked. And one of the things that I discovered was that my money was in my 401k in a very low interest earning account. And when I like dug into that and started understanding it, and it's also, you have to understand, like, I like to say I grew up on Wall Street because I worked on a trading floor, right? Not with stocks, but with bonds, which is another kind of financial instrument. But just because I worked on Wall Street and I was exposed to the financial industry and I understood financial language. And like I said, I was writing the annual report chapter on what was the global trends in financial markets. It doesn't mean that I was managing my own financial accounts or that I even understood what was happening in my financial accounts. Like, I didn't really understand the difference between stocks and bonds, right? And I didn't understand how my 401k was being invested. And I guess I vaguely remember getting documents, and so many of us, and women in particular, I think, we get these financial documents. They're filled with language that we don't understand, that may as well be Chinese, right?
Yes.
Lots of terms, jargon, and you sort of open up the envelope. Nowadays, it might be an email, like, you know,
yeah.
And we file it for later. I'll get to it. And especially as a mom of a large family, there are a lot of things that are on that, like, I'll get to it list that aren't urgent, like dinner and laundry are way more urgent than what's going on in my financial accounts.
Yeah. And I'd rather open up a personal development book than read a stock report.
At that time, I was probably like opening up, like, you know, how to toilet train kids and
that's
how to
right.
get kids to sleep through the night or something like that. Right?
Yeah, that's right. That's crazy though, because we think just because you have the skill set and you have the knowledge and you worked on the bonds trading floor that you would like have that all under control. But I totally see life controls us in many cases. And it certainly did that when in the place you were in your life. And then maybe the Mack truck you needed, you know, to like wake you up. You know, that's, I talk about that a lot.
It was totally the Mack truck. And I also want to say that at that time, it was pre-Google. Maybe 19 years ago, Google was just coming up, because I remember doing some research. What was the search engine that we had before Google? I don't even remember anymore. Like, there was Internet
Explorer.
Yeah,
was there one?
But I think
it was usually tied. Yahoo was, you know, but
Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I worked for AOL. So I went to work at AOL in 93. That was, I know, the beginning of the internet, because Prodigy was number one, CompuServe was number two, and AOL was number three at the time. And then we took number one, at, you know, fairly quickly after that. Yeah.
Right. But so nowadays you can Google anything, and Googling is a word, right? Like, if
yes.
you want to say, what's a stock? What's a bond? You just Google it. But in those days, like, I couldn't just Google that.
Yeah, you had to go into a service. You had to, you know, be a subscriber in a service like AOL or CompuServe or Prodigy. And then you go to the World Wide Web and do a search
right.
from there. That's usually the way. I think.
Or you had to go to the library and actually check out a book.
Yes.
Yes. Remember those days?
Yes. I remember we had encyclopedias on a bookshelf. When I think about how like limiting that is in terms of the information available on a bookshelf in a set of printed books versus like now what you can find out, just like instructional videos on YouTube and any information you want. Like, I use it so much now, like for spelling and definitions and finding synonyms for words I want to
100%.
Use. It's so
great. The thesaurus, I have one today, you know, but the cover is like, I think I got it for my bat mitzvah. So I think the cover is like falling off or something like that, but I got that one. I like it.
Yeah. And how to pronounce words, you know, like if they're like, what, how do I pronounce that? There's a little speaker next to the word. And I didn't ever even knew that. And somebody showed it to me one day. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So you had this aha moment of like, I need to get a hold, and you, that 401k, you were like, okay, I can do more with my money when it's sitting there. Was that kind of the thing you thought?
Yeah. So that was one thing I did. So that was one of the financial accounts we looked at. And then there was another financial account. We had put money for investments with a financial advisor. And as I was searching with Yahoo and Yahoo Finance and starting to learn about, oh, what's going on with our money and how's it being invested, I had also uncovered that we had a financial manager, but I noticed that he was like churning the account, which means that he was buying and selling and buying and selling and buying and selling different investments. And every time there's a buy and a sell, he gets a little bit of commissions, a little bit here, a little bit there. And all of that money like sucks away and eats away from my money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was okay. So that was the second thing. And the third thing, I think those were the three, was that I thought that I was a hotshot, like, you know, Wall Street investment who knew what I was doing. And I put some money, I took a hot tip and I put some money with someone. And within a few months, I lost $50,000 because I really didn't know what I was doing. So it's like, I don't know, three strikes and you're out. Like, I was like, I think I better figure this out. So I did. And I started researching and I started reading. I ordered some books. I have a whole bookshelf of personal finance books right now. And I started following. I think it was probably just the beginning of the blogging generation, right? People who were like starting to be personal finance bloggers and really getting a lot of understanding and information about what's going on. And I switched up the way we were managing our money. And now I took back almost complete control. I have a small teeny bit here in Israel with one finance manager, just for historical reasons. But other than that, I'm the one now who's in charge of our money. And I keep it very, very simple. I don't try to time the market. I'm not buying and selling. I changed it up to invest for the long term. And it's really almost like a set and forget kind of way of investing. So it's not time intensive. And I'm really happy with the way it's turned out. And I've saved so much money on fees that I could have been paying to financial advisors.
Yeah.
And I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
The 1K investor. That's great. Okay. Yeah. We'll put that in the show notes. Definitely. She held it up for those who are on audio. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the analogy. Cause I remember somebody told me or said this once and it really resonated with me. And it was like, nobody is going to manage your money or care about your money as much as you care about your money. And it's, I guess, akin to like, you know, taking your kid to a babysitter. You know, a working mom, for example, is, you know, you can take your kid to the babysitter and hopefully you'll find a good one and they'll take care of your baby, but nobody will love your baby as much as you love your baby. Right. So, and I guess, you know, I have financial advisors, so I had a lot of stock from AOL. And so we got some, you know, it was like a lot of people in the company were like, oh, you should go with these people. You should go with these people. So it was like, okay. So I went with somebody that was recommended and I, you know, they 22 years later, they're still my, and I love them, but I think that the key thing is if you don't really want to do that and you want somebody else to do it, to like have regular conversations with them, have, you know, I feel very fortunate because in this day and age, you know, you bank at the ATM. You don't, you know, in the old days, you used to go into the bank and you used to know the bank guy and, you know, everybody knew each other. And now you don't know that. And so I know them. And so, you know, I used to go in their offices when I lived close by and I don't anymore, but we talk very frequently. And so it's like, you know, I have somebody else doing it, but I feel like, you know, I'm involved. So that's good.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also when you have a financial advisor, and not everybody wants to do it like I do it, but one thing that I feel very strongly about for women, also because most of us are going to be managing money on our own at some point in our life, either we're going to outlive our spouses if we're married, or you get divorced and so you don't have a spouse at all, you have to manage money on your own, or you never get married, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for many reasons, 80 or 90% of women in the world are going to manage money on their own at some point in their life, and especially towards the end of their life, the second half of their life. And if you don't want to manage your money on your own, that's 100% okay. But the language, so that you can have a peer-to-peer conversation with your financial advisor rather than like a teacher-student or parent-child, like, but to be empowered around your money and what's going on. And I think that's one thing that my book really gives women is the language, because as I said, like it could be Chinese and it's important to learn the language and have comfort. And it's just like any language, like I live in Israel, so I also speak Hebrew. The more you use a language, the more comfortable you feel with that language. But if you don't know the difference between a stock and a bond, where you don't know that stocks and equities are the same thing, or mutual funds and exchange traded funds. Like, your financial advisor can be sitting behind his mahogany desk and throwing these terms at you, and you're kind of like a deer in the headlights, and you're like, oh my gosh, what are all those things? And it's flooding your system and you don't know what to do with it. So, and especially if you're having a conversation and like 10 terms are thrown at you at once, it's like, where do you even start? So the sooner you learn a foreign language, the more quickly you can adapt and become accustomed to using that language. So that's
I love the fact that you're such a good example of somebody who took her past and her wisdom and her skills and took that kind of painful experience and that aha moment. And then it led you on a new journey and a new path. And then this book is great because I imagine this is the book you wrote for the old you that you wish you had. Yeah.
100%. Exactly. Yeah.
So elementary terms, my dear Watson. Yes. I think I need that book. So it might be the finance personal development book that I'll pick up. That's funny.
I have to tell you, somebody saw me, saw my book, and she bought it. She and her husband bought it, and he read it cover to cover. And then she said she was only halfway through. They found, just by starting to look at their money, $400 a month that they didn't even realize was, like, they started just looking at their money. And she said they had the first like loving conversation about money in like 30 years that they've been married. And they started taking steps towards investing their money.
Right? Yeah. So many couples, I think all the conversations about money are tense and arguing, and that's the root of a lot of arguments and dissatisfaction. So that's so great. I love that. So I am definitely going to look it up, and because I could definitely use something that like dumbs down the jargon. So
that's,
I would love
it.
That. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny because it's like going and learning all that, like on your own, it is, to me, just does not light me up. I want to do things in my life right now that light me up. So making it easy, and yeah. That's great. So tell me what a money mindset coach is.
So let me, I'll go back a little bit and rewind my journey. So 13 years ago, I left my job at the Bank of Israel. That was when my baby, who's now, he'll be 14 this month, he was just shy of a year old. And I was like, number one, burnt out. I didn't want to do that anymore. I wasn't advancing. There had been a whole reorganization in the bank. I wasn't in the department where that lit me up anymore. That happened when I was on maternity leave. Very sneaky of them.
That always happens. Reorgs, you get back, and yeah.
Anyway, it's fine. And I was like, you know what? And I had a lot of kids. And I was like, you know what? I really want to go into financial planning because I've had my journey. I love what you call it, Lori, a Mack truck moment, right? My aha moment, but it's painful, but a rude awakening. Mm-hmm. And I really want to help people who are in my position, like who want to manage their money, to manage their money better. Mm-hmm. So when I started working with people, like civilians, instead of government finance or institutional finance, then I started noticing that people had a lot of triggers around money. Right? Like when you talk about conversations between husband and wives, or I had a conversation with one of my old financial planning clients who's retiring now. She's 65 and she's a seven-figure earner, very successful in her business. She was a great money earner. You might call it a money manifester, money receiver, all sorts of different things that I love. But when it came to actually managing her money, like looking at it, investing, thinking about the next steps, she was blocked. And her husband, who was earning like a quarter of what she was earning, he called me, he set up the appointment in her office, right? And then she said to me, Debbie, I need courage to meet with you. And like, oh, that was an interesting comment that she made. And another one of mine had a $2 million inheritance. I was working at that time as a fee-only financial planner. And our regular 2-hour meeting went over by 15 minutes. So I charged her for the extra 50 minutes. Maybe it was $30 or $40. And she went ballistic on me. Like for that, I was like, this is like very interesting. She's got a lot of money, but my like few little pennies is setting her off. And I started seeing so many of these examples. Another client of mine who had a probably an 8-figure inheritance, and she and her husband ended up separating and splitting. And she's like, Debbie, money isn't a blessing. It's a curse. Mm. And so I realized I needed to get some new training. And I went and I got a coaching certificate in money coaching from the Financial Recovery Institute. And then that was way more practical than on the emotional side. So then I learned tapping, EFT, you know, mm-hmm. that, right? So yeah. You know, now I'm a certified tapping practitioner also. And then I finally did a life coaching certification, like all of these different ways of helping people manage the emotional side of money.
Mm. Yeah.
And as my business, it just naturally pivoted from financial planning and coaching to money coaching. And then as my business grew, I left my financial planning colleague. We have a very good relationship. I still refer clients to him for investing, but my own business grew. Then people were asking me, hey, can you help me grow my business? And so it was, again, a very organic growth into business and money coaching. So that's what I do now.
Yeah. And honestly, I think even as a financial planner, you want your clients to succeed. And if they don't get to the root of what they're causing the problems that they have for mismanagement or whatever it may be, that ultimately they won't be successful. You know, they'll keep, running into the same problems. And so what have you found? Because, you know, I've done some money mindset training myself, and, you know, I've discovered some things that were modeled right from my parents.
Yes. 100%.
And so at a very young age, the things that we saw, the things that we heard, those are things that imprint. And then we go into adulthood and we don't know that those imprints are there, but we operate based on those imprints. So yeah, I bet that is very, what did you learn about the person who said, I need to have courage to come visit you? What was the root of that?
So with her, we never did coaching. It was only a financial planning relationship. Mm, yeah. So we didn't go deeper. I did offer it to her as I was growing and pivoting my business, but she didn't take me up on that. But when we had this conversation this week, it was just a friendly like coffee chat. And she like told me that I've helped her really feel much more safe and secure and open up. So just by being on my email list and reading and participating in some of my trainings, then it has changed the way she relates to money. And mm-hmm. it might not be as much of a block. It doesn't matter where you are on your journey, we all have more growth and more layers to uncover and to find out where the blocks are. And, you know, I have clients who, one of my clients has been growing her business, and she told me this week, she's like, she came to our call and a pretty audacious goal for her that she set. And she's like, I feel like I'm not having any fun. Mm. And so we actually mapped out, we looked at her calendar, where are we going to like block in some fun for your life? Because we don't want our business to be heavy and draggy and slogging it out. And she said, I really thought they were going to tell me that if I was a serious business owner, that I couldn't have any fun. And we uncovered that that's her mother's message. Like that was her mother's story. Mm-hmm. And so we gave that story back to her mom.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I find that it's funny you should bring that up, because I was just thinking about it. Is one thing that I've seen a lot of is that in the entrepreneurial space, if you had a parent who was an entrepreneur that like killed himself or herself, like worked their fingers to the bone, never was home, kind of neglected the family and stuff, then you have this desire to be an entrepreneur, but you're self-sabotaging in some way, or you don't believe that you have this thing that you think, oh, it all has to be about hard work. I can't have any fun. So yeah, I don't know. Was her mother a hard worker, or was it the father and the mother had some anger issues about the father? I don't know. It could come both ways, right?
Right. So this particular situation. Her mother was a hard worker. Her father actually passed away when she was very young. So her mother ended up, I guess, taking over the business and worked very, very hard in the business. And she was, her mom was a single parent. So there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. So that's so, people don't realize that. I bet that was so freeing for her to uncover that.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I've had clients tell me it's like taboo to be rich. And that's very much like, someone told me that today and was like, okay, you know, who's, and he didn't even have to, I didn't even have to ask him the question. He's like, he offered, oh, I know that's my father's story.
Yeah.
But just like bringing it to the surface and uncovering it and being aware of that.
Yes.
Right. Cause we were talking about, he's like, I want to be rich. Right. Mm-hmm. We're looking at goals, but then he felt this cognitive dissonance inside of him, like the excitement and the freedom and the peacefulness of the wealth and the abundance. And at the same time, the pushback from his father's voice in his head, telling him that it's, you know, taboo. You can't do that.
Yeah. I bet it makes you feel so much better. Like as a coach, as a financial planner, it wouldn't it be great if all financial planners had this like knowledge of how to emotionally coach. But I mean, don't you feel more empowered? Like, you know, when somebody comes to you that you're going to give them more than they actually think they need. It's kind of incredible that you have that ability.
I love the way you put that. Yeah. That's fun. Yeah. Cause we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we don't know, like, even I have my own coaches, right? We mm-hmm. don't know where our own internal blocks are until somebody is a mirror for us and helps us to bring them out. And then once they're brought to the surface, we could decide what we want to do with it. Like, sometimes journaling is going to be enough. Sometimes you'll need some tapping, sometimes hypnosis or NLP. Like, there are so many different modalities. Like, you know, one of the things that I want to do is I want to do like clearing some generational trauma that I have this like sixth sense that there's something there. So there are people who specialize in that.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of clearing that we can do. And I don't really know much about epigenetics, but I think that many of us carry in our DNA.
Yes.
We carry generational trauma. And like this generation that you and I are living in, Lori, like, we're really living in an age of abundance.
Yes.
Right. I grew up in the United States. You live in the United States. And since, like, I guess there was the Vietnam War, but since then, like, that's like 50 years ago, there has been this period of quiet. And in the Western world, pretty much there's been a period of quiet. Yeah, we've had in Europe, like, you know, Czechoslovakia, you know, broke up into a bunch of different countries. And of course, I live in Israel and we have our periods of unrest, but we are pretty much in an age of abundance in the mm-hmm. Western world. And we don't have to be in that readiness and war state, like fight, flight, freeze, that state of survival.
Yeah.
But our brains are wired for survival, right? So even if we know, we can see facts on the grounds that everything is calm, and whether you go to work every day or you're opening your own business, but you go to the supermarket and there's no shortage, and clothing stores and like everything you want, there's so much available, but still our brains are wired to keep us safe. You know, they're wired for status quo. They're always on the lookout, like, oh, maybe a saber-toothed tiger is going to jump out and like grab me. And cause that's the way we're designed, you know? And so it's hard for us to see the possibilities for growth and expansion, because even though the evidence is that we live in an abundant world, our brain is not wired for abundance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And talking about ancestral and generational impact in our mindset. And I think too, with you being Jewish, I mean, that would be an interesting journey to go back and see the impact of that ancestry and what that means. So yeah. I think that's fascinating. I'd love to follow up with you after you do that, start journeying into that. Because I do believe that our soul is, you know, we're in this body, but we were in bodies before. So not only do we have our ancestors' DNA, but, you know, our soul has carried forth from past lives, wherever that was and whatever that looked like. Yeah, I think
we do. We do for sure have that belief in Judaism that your soul can come back again into this world. But like that's exactly why I want to do this work at some point. I'm kind of a little bit nervous about it, but I know that all four of my grandparents were like they escaped from Nazi Germany and they ended up in Los Angeles and rebuilt their lives in Los Angeles. And I know that they lived like really on nothing when they were growing up. You know, my mom and her aunt's family, my mother's mother and her sister, they lived like next to each other. And my mom talked about like their milk ration and who would get to drink the milk. Was it the pregnant mom, the nursing mom, the toddler, the baby? Like who? Because there was like so little for them as they were reestablishing themselves. And you know, my dad's family has their own story. So I think there's stuff that came down to me. And I want to clear that and open up and expand and do some work.
And at least, I mean, I think if anything, it'll give you a level of much deeper understanding on those people that came before you.
Yes.
I think that's really neat. I don't know. As we get older, does that become more of a, you know, just the searching? I know a lot of people do a lot of genealogy studying and map out their family tree. Once they get older, maybe it's a byproduct of having more time. Maybe it's a byproduct of wanting to leave a legacy and wanting their children to know where they came from. But yeah, and there's a lot of things that are available now on the internet with the internet where you can find this stuff. Have you ever done, this just came to me. Have you ever done the what's it called? I think one of them is 21andMe or something, but it's like you can find out, you can submit a blood sample or I don't know, saliva sample. And you can find out your DNA. It's a DNA database and you can find out like who's related to you. So you can do that. I haven't done that either. I'm kind of leery about like that being out there in the world, my DNA. I don't know. Not that I've done anything bad, but I'm just like, who knows if something could come up like where there's a computer glitch or something.
You're like related to Al Capone or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Or Ted Bundy or something like horrible like that. Yeah. But yeah, it's a crazy world we live in. I was thinking too about when you're talking about, you know, abundance and access. I think the pandemic really made us look at stuff differently. Because people were afraid to go to the grocery store and touch things. I mean, that's how crazy it was. I never online shop. And I ordered, I only did it once, I think. Maybe I did it twice. Ordered groceries to be brought to my house. And yeah, but what if we didn't have the internet? What if we had a situation where like the internet went down too? We just live in a world where it's been easy.
Well, there was a situation. You were probably asleep at that time. But in December, in my time, because I'm like 7 hours ahead of you, Google went down for a few hours. So those of us like in Europe and, you know, and part of Asia where, you know, in Middle East where I live, like we didn't have access to Google for like 45 minutes. But that means you Google Docs, you're on G Suite, you know, like you couldn't Google anything, right? Your Google Drive, like everything went down and there was this panic, like, oh my gosh. Like I have no access to my information. It was, so you guys missed it because by the time you woke up, everything was sorted out.
That's funny. Yeah. Cause I started like keeping a lot of stuff on the cloud because I'm like, well, I can get it anywhere. And so I don't have to, and I don't use up all my space on my computer. And if my computer drive dies, but what if Google dies? Yeah. That's something to consider. So yeah, who knows? So what is the, what do you think in your book is one of the biggest tips that would be helpful for someone? And I like to talk to the people that are our age, you know, at midlife or older. What do you think one of the most important tips for somebody who's feels like they could get their finances in better order?
Get started. Like just really, I think really start where you are. When I was recently meeting with a we've done a lot of work on money and shame around the way he was managing his money. And we've now he's like, no, I don't feel like there's shame there anymore. Maybe a little bit, but whatever. And now we're talking about more growth and expanding because he's also in his 50s, hasn't really been on top of it. And so wherever you are, you know what? I'm going to back up. forget to get started. Yes, get started, but like accept yourself, like really for who you are and where you are. If you could have been doing something different, you would have been doing something different. Like if you had the emotional capacity, if you had the time capacity, the, you know, emotional energetic capacity, like if you could have been doing it, you would have, because we don't intentionally self-sabotage, right? We do want to have our best interests at heart. So if you haven't been doing it, or even if you have, but you want to take it up a notch, just accept where you are, that you're human and you're doing the best that you can. And now if there's a desire to, and a need, I think, especially as I said before, for women, there's a need to be on top of it. Like I do have a client who's just moved into, she's one of my former financial planning clients. She's moved into an assisted living facility. Corona was not good for her, the isolation, et cetera. And now her like 50-year-old daughter is having to step into her mother's shoes. And it's so hard because her mother doesn't, I know where a lot of things are, but her mother doesn't remember everything, doesn't have access to everything. And we don't want that for our children.
Yeah.
Like we don't plan to hurt them on purpose.
Yeah.
Right. So the more proactive we can be putting things in order, then if you're not going to do it for yourself, do it for your kids. Yeah. Do it for whoever's going to step into your shoes after you.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Would you say that? So one of the things that I'm, one of my goals for July is to do is actually, believe it or not, to every Monday, kind of like, you know, what would you do once a week? You know, not go to the gym. You'd like to do that more often, but you know, something that you would do once a week, something you plan to do once a week, maybe vacuum, I don't know, vacuum your house. So, but I once a week to like review everything, to review it, like have like set it as an appointment on my schedule. Because what I do is I wait till the end of the month to get like, oh, your new statement's ready. And then at the end of the month, I'm like, oh, what was that? I don't remember what I, because sometimes when the bill comes through, it's not really specific as to what you bought, you know? So, yeah. And like I buy stuff on Amazon, it just says Amazon. So then I've got to go in my Amazon account and see, oh, was that a business expense or was it not a business expense? So I just finished yesterday categorizing my entire 2020 for my taxes. And it took me so much time, multiple days, to get my 2020 organized. So this year it was like, I'm going to stay on top of it, which I did initially, but it's kind of fell by the wayside a little bit the busier I got. And so now it's like one, you know, when I was reviewing my July, cause I always plan my month ahead, what my goals are. And that's what like one of my goal, my priorities is Mondays is about finance. Yeah. And so,
we have family finance Thursday, 8:30 every Thursday morning.
Yes. Where,
and we meet and we talk about it. And what are we going to do this week? And yeah,
that is a great idea. I love that idea. Yeah. My kids also, I don't know if you've heard of this, but they in the past year have gotten really into an app called YNAB. Have you heard of YNAB?
Sure. Yeah. It's been around for many years. It's
really?
Yeah.
So I think it stands for you need a budget or something like that. YNAB.
Yes.
But they love it. And it's made them want to save. It's turned them into savers and almost money hoarders, because they're like, no, that's for this and that's for this. And it's really, at least in their millennial brains, has really helped them. And I love that they found something that works for them, because they certainly didn't learn that from their I'm not good at math mother. So,
and that's such a fallacy to be good at math, but so many women have that. And I think I was actually better at math than English. My SAT scores in math were way above my English ones, even though I'm very literate and very eloquent. Yes. But, and I can speak on your podcast for hours.
you know, two languages. I'm jealous. I want to be bilingual.
I used to speak French, but I forgot everything. You don't need math to manage money. It's not calculus. It's like, it's not trigonometry. It's not proofs in geometry. And I loved all that stuff, but it's not really so challenging. That's the truth.
Yeah. And I know I even use Google to do my math. I'm like, right. 12 times whatever in the search bar, it goes back. I'm like, okay, what's the percent of whatever? I'm like, I didn't even need to figure out that percentage formula. So yeah, right. I don't have that limiting belief that I'm not good at math anymore. I just have the belief that it's not one of my favorite things. So
okay. And Google has to not go down on you. Otherwise you're not going to be able to do math. Right.
I will be financially illiterate if Google goes down. That is hilarious. And that is so true. Unfortunately, Google knows how much we need them. Because
yes, they do.
Yeah, they own us. Well, it was great to get to know you, Debbie. Thank you so much. You're doing such great things in the world. I know that your clients are very lucky to have you with not only your financial knowledge, but your knowledge of how the human brain works and what's happening to them upstairs. So thank you so much for being here. We'll put your book in the show notes. I'm excited to share it. And I'm also going to order it and read it myself because I want the elementary version of how to do this stuff. So
this is kindergarten. So for any woman who wants to start at kindergarten, this is where you go.
Awesome. I love my guests because I learn so much from them and I get the best stuff. My last guest has she's doing a retreat to Greece and I'm actually might even do that. I mean, it's like, yeah, nice. A bucket list. Yeah.
Okay. So when I do the retreat in Israel, maybe you'll do a hop, skip and a jump from one to the next.
Yes. 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 I've always wanted to see the pyramids. How far is
that's
that
Egypt.
From you? That's Egypt.
That's Egypt.
See, I need geography lessons too.
When I first came to Israel in 1984, I took a bus from Israel to the pyramids and I actually flew back. It's pretty close. I don't remember how many hours it was, but it's not so far.
All right. Good. Good. All right. Thanks so much, Debbie.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.